Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. It is a beautiful Tuesday morning here in New York City. And we have got a beautiful 3 hours of sports programming for you today. Big Tuesday. Here we go. There are more rumors.
Happy birthday, Jenna Wolf.
It's Jenna's birthday. Let's go, Jenna. Come on,
that
people.
Was the longest random pause I could have possibly.
I mean, my goodness. Played. Just begging for it. Happy birthday, Jenna. Maybe we had something planned later. Well, hey, guys, the big thing we got planned later, scrap it. Scrap it. She wanted it now. Okay. You could have three cookies later, one cookie right now. You wanted it right now. My God.
Of attention, I got it, and now we move on.
50 is a big one.
Thank you. Yes. 50.
27.
Is a big one. 27 is even bigger.
All the guys out there want to know. Jenna letting you know. Holla, 27.
All the guys are wondering.
There are more rumors swirling around
Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham.
Let's go.
There could be a new quarterback emerging on top of the draft charts, but we are going to start this program the way we've been starting a lot of programs with LeBron.
It's going to be a tight show.
And the Lakers. Love you both. Another day, another bad loss for a Laker team that really doesn't have any losses to give away. Last night, they fell to the lowly Grizzlies, 110-105. LeBron did have a triple-double, but he was just 8 of 23 from the field. Lakers once again struggled with chemistry, once again struggled on defense. They're three games back of the 8th seed now with 22 games left to go. Here's LeBron James on what he thinks is going on.
At this point, if you are still allowing distractions to affect you how the way you play, then this is the wrong franchise to be a part of, and you should just come and be like, listen, I can't do this. Like, seriously, if you're distracted by playoff pushes and then all the stuff that's been talked about this year, just come and do your job. We do our job at a high level, and you know that's not a distraction. That's what you want. As you want every game, you want to feel like you're fighting for something.
Nick, why did the Lakers lose last night?
Well, same old, same old. No defensive intensity to start the game whatsoever. They actually finally had their best stretch of defense they've had in maybe a month to start the fourth quarter, but that coincided with them having as bad of a stretch of offense as you can have, so it erased any progress they had there. Ridiculous coaching decisions once again. Lance Stephenson, the only guy off the bench who does anything for you in the first half, he of course gets 1 second of playing time in the second half inexplicably. And LeBron's not LeBron right now. I mean, this is undeniable. LeBron said he's going to activate playoff mode, and I understand since he said that, he has averaged a triple-double, and he's given you, I think it's 27, 10, and 12 a night. But he's not LeBron. He is laboring. He is not exploding the way we're used to. And on defense, he's not a non-factor. He's a negative factor right now. These are all just obvious things to the eye. It's just like it's obvious he is playing at the heaviest weight, which is hurting his conditioning, all which lingers back to the injury. But none of that should be enough to lose to the Grizzlies. None of that should be enough to lose to the Hawks. None of that should be enough to have gotten blown out by the Pacers without Victor Oladipo. This team's a mess right now. And so I understand Laker fans this morning are mad about some very bad calls in the fourth quarter, and people are mad about a lot of things that you have Joe Kim Noah all of a sudden, it was his birthday yesterday, he hit the way back machine. I don't care about any of it. The Grizzlies, allowing the Grizzlies to score 34 points in the first quarter is like giving up a 50-point quarter to a real NBA offense. This is the worst offense in basketball over the course of the season, and it's gotten worse since they lost Marc Gasol, and you're playing uphill the entire game once again. This was could have been a great night for the Lakers. Spurs lost again. Kings lost. You had real opportunity to make up ground, and instead, you, after beating the Rockets, you lose to the Pelicans with no Anthony Davis. You lose to the Grizzlies with the team they're running out there. Mm-hmm. It's not inexplicable, but it is unforgivable.
Maybe we just, because of LeBron's injury, we didn't want to make that an excuse, so we just made that part of the conversation. Maybe the Lakers won't get back to the level that they had before LeBron. The night LeBron got injured, they beat the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Maybe we would be better off served thinking this Lakers team won't get back to that level. Now, do they miss Lonzo Ball? They really, really do. But they also missed the real LeBron James. LeBron said he was going to activate the playoff LeBron. it when he went to hit the button, it didn't activate.
Correct.
Because in the last two games, regardless of what the numbers say, when you watch LeBron, with all the eyes on LeBron, as closely we watch LeBron, he's not the same. Nick is admitting it. He does look like he's laboring more. He does look like he weighs more. He can't get to the basket with ease the way that he used to. Missed some bunnies last night. Right there, point blank range. Didn't have the type of lift that we're expecting. So for me, it's LeBron is not who he was. This roster constructed wasn't constructed well. They don't have enough shooters. They're not very, very athletic. And you talk about the young Lakers, they don't like the pressure that they're under now. LeBron talked about, man, when you're playing for this type of franchise, did Rob Pelinka and did Magic Johnson in drafting these players and the free agent players they got this offseason, they're not a good fit. And I don't have to wait till the end of the regular season to be able to see that. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something drastic. Like, this is the kind of road trip. You go to New Orleans without AD. You go to Memphis and give up that type of loss there. Typically, this is the kind of night a coach gets fired.
But if it was coach was going to get fired, it would have been after the Hawks game before the All-Star break where you have over a week to kind of end.
And when they didn't do it there, that to me means they might be stuck for the rest of the season.
And listen, the NBA is a players' league. LeBron James, up until a few weeks ago, was still unanimously considered the best player in the world. That might be changing as of this morning or yesterday or tomorrow. But we know the level LeBron, when he's fully operational, can take a team to. We didn't see it 9 years ago. We saw it 9 months ago in the NBA playoffs, right? So yes, we know that exists. So this is on the players. But Luke Walton has been a travesty. There are four guys last night for the Lakers. LeBron, Kuzma, Ingram, and Bullock all played an entire 12-minute quarter without a rest. Why? Once again, I think because he just lost track of time. Mike Muscala played 13 minutes the first game they acquired him. He then was a DNP coach's decision every game until last night, where he plays, 11 and a half minutes. Why? No idea. And on the front office side of things, forget the draft picks. Like, those guys need to develop. When they took Lonzo and Ingram at number two, both picks, people weren't criticizing those picks. Now, maybe they should have been savvier, but those were the consensus picks there.
Yes.
But the free agent signings, everyone criticized. And then how about the midseason move? Your best center, Zubats, is traded for Mike Muscala. Why? I don't know. There are so many things outside of the players that the team is working against what should be the obvious goal, because you wonder, is the GM really an NBA GM, and is the coach really an NBA coach?
Well, then that leads us to ask, where do you go from here? How do you finish out the season and hope you're actually going to move forward and not stay stagnant? I mean, you see it from LeBron. He's more frustrated and expresses that frustration more and more. I mean, we're starting every show with comments LeBron makes after a game, which, look, last year you didn't have a great team, but you didn't hear this level of frustration from LeBron James.
Well, for one, he was in the Eastern Conference. He's dominated the Eastern Conference with a tremendous amount of confidence. And if they could get healthy in Cleveland, how many teams could beat the Cavs last year? Maybe one in the Celtics, which they took them to the hilt.
Pacers damn near did, too.
Yeah, but that team wasn't good enough to be able to beat a LeBron James Cavs. So, no, they're stuck. This is the roster, all right? And when you look back at it, I'm going to look back at not getting Anthony Davis and being able to, those players that they talked about being involved in those trades, they haven't responded as well. The organization hadn't responded as well. So it's going to be a lost season. The first season you get LeBron James to Los Angeles could be a lost season. And the only hope would be, man, Sacramento, San Antonio, and what they've been doing down the stretch, not playing the type of basketball that we had seen them play for the first two-thirds of the season.
That's the only reason the Lakers are still alive.
Right.
Listen, they have to go at this point 15-7 the rest of the way, minimum, to have a chance. There is nothing we've seen over the last, basically, since Christmas Day, the day LeBron got hurt, that makes you think they can. And I want to make this very clear. A lot of this falls on LeBron. And people will say, well, it's LeBron because he has not been the same guy since the injury. I think that is true, but the injuries can be an explanation rather than an excuse, but they're a reality. And part of the reason that LeBron James is a one of one in the NBA is prior to this year, you never had to worry about this. What if he gets dinged and he's not fully operational? What if he gets dinged and at the end of the year, because of that, he doesn't have his full stamina? That has never been something a problem. And now we're seeing a guy, I guess maybe one of the downsides, the only downside to having never been hurt, I don't know that he knew how to deal with the conditioning and the training during an injury because he'd never had one. Because he does not look anything close right now to the best player in the world.
Well, you mentioned you'd like to see him go 15-7. They have to go 15-7. They've gone 4-10 over the last 14, so it's not looking great for the Lakers. We'll take a break, switch to some football on the other side. Coming up, how new details now on where Antonio Brown might end up. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
We'll get to Antonio Brown in a minute, but first, check this out. FSU's Terrence Mann going up high for the one-handed putback slam.
Look, let me see this again. Young fellow with the good hair. I think this might be the wrong video. However, it's still a nice dunk.
Sixers Pelicans, Ben Simmons, watch it.
This one is the right video.
To evade the defender before making the easy layup.
Well, around the world, see?
He is a great defensive player, and... Man, you got to get to your spot on the court. That's him inside the restricted zone.
Yeah, he did.
He's nasty inside
that restricted.
Got some Suns and Heat. Dwayne Wade spinning through the defense, hitting the up and under layup.
Man, the time machine was working last night. D. Wade, Noah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was in full effect. And the cornrows that he's got in his hair.
Yeah, what's D. Wade doing with the hair?
Oh, man, he's trying to get younger, man.
We got to talk to Gabby.
You marry a younger woman and everything, it happens, man.
I think he married an older woman.
Moving on to Antonio Brown.
I'm correct.
If I were a betting girl, I'd put my money on the disgruntled wide receiver not playing for the Steelers next season. He wants a trade. And he has hinted at possible destinations. One of those hints, his Instagram post photoshopped in a 49ers jersey. Right now, the Niners are the betting favorite at a landing spot if Brown is moved, with teams like the Saints and Packers not far behind. Cece, what do you think? What's the most likely landing spot for Antonio Brown?
I think San Francisco is one of the landing spots, but if you listen to some of the information coming out of Pittsburgh, you know, because there's tremendous restriction they're putting on trading. A very, very valuable commodity. They're not going to trade him to New England. They're not going to trade him to anyone in the NFC.
AFC North.
And they prefer not to trade him to anyone in the AFC. So, yeah, we can keep drawing things up of where he might end up, who has draft picks and everything. But I think that San Francisco will be among the teams that right now they're in a pressure situation. Like, they got to be able to get some playmakers for Jimmy Garoppolo, for him to be as efficient and get their money's worth from him as a quarterback. So I think San Francisco is one of the spots. I also look for Tampa Bay. You know, DeSean Jackson, He's not happy there. They're going to get him out. Bruce Arians coming into town. He's had experience with Antonio. So I look for Tampa Bay to be a part of it. The Colts might be a part of it. The Jets might be a part of it. So I think there are a couple landing spots for him that I believe. But Kyle Shanahan, I believe in San Francisco, is the most likely spot today for him to land up.
Okay, so if we just want to cross out New England, we know he'd be deadly in New England, but they don't want to trade in New England, understandably. We want to cross out the Bengals, Ravens, and Browns because they're AFC North right. teams. Mm-hmm. Every other team is at least a potentially a viable option. The reality is every other team in the league would be a good fit for Antonio Brown because he's that type of player. Take the Kansas City Chiefs, the third highest scoring offense ever. You know what? He could help them because he can help everybody. Or the Oakland Raiders, who seem to be a mess offensively.
Regardless
this
of quarterbacks?
Year. I believe he fits anywhere.
Well, this is the thing. I don't believe he fits anywhere because he's been targeted on average 10 to 15 times a game. He has played in dynamic offenses that were typically spread offenses where they had three receivers on the field. He has had the luxury to be able to have the flexibility inside the system of Pittsburgh that he could freelance an awful lot. What you find out in free agency is you find out a lot of things that they don't tell you before you sign the contract. So for me, I'm apprehensive. If he doesn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback, I believe you will see more outburst like we saw in Pittsburgh later in his career. If they don't have three receivers on the field where he has the flexibility to be able to play multiple positions, you will see a guy get frustrated like we saw in Pittsburgh. And if he's not prime time, if he's not playing in the big games, how is he going to react? So thinking he's a no-brainer for the other 31 teams, we'd be very, very naive, all right? We're mostly system players. This is not a guy that can go to any system and to be able to play well. How would he do well in Jacksonville? They run the ball. They run the ball an awful lot. Tom Coughlin overseeing that. They're a little more strict, a little more firm there. How would that work out? So I believe that there are better landing spots for AB than others.
I totally agree. There's a hierarchy of ideal and not ideal for Antonio Brown. The point I was making is every team in the league, in my opinion, gets better when you add a player of his caliber. But there are, if we are trying to fit the puzzle pieces together, Chris mentioned one of them in the Colts, where they have cap space, they have extra draft picks, and I believe T.Y. Hilton is an okay number one receiver, but would be a dynamic number two. But there's another one that is in the NFC, that has the Hall of Fame quarterback, that has the extra draft capital, that has the cap space, and that wants to win right now.
Green Bay.
And that's Green Bay. We know he can play in cold weather. Now, I understand Pittsburgh's not as cold as Green Bay, but it's not like he's been playing his career in a dome. We also know that he's thrived with a Hall of Fame quarterback. We also know Green Bay has, I believe, more of a urgency right now than they have in recent years. That is a spot that I think every piece fits. For the Steelers, you don't worry about it because they're cross conference.
Right.
For AB, you know they play a lot of the three wide receiver set you're talking about. See, he is. You're going to have a quarterback, one of the few guys in the league in my eyes that would actually be a clear step up from Ben Roethlisberger. There's a lot of boxes checked with the Green Bay Packers to go along with. They can trade a first-round pick and still have a first-round pick in reserve.
Okay, what about this question? The one guy that you guys have not mentioned at all is Mike Tomlin. How much is he going to need a coach who's going to be able to understand how to deal with him, his on-field stuff, his off-field stuff, the way Mike Tomlin was able to do? Or maybe he's thinking he wasn't able to do it.
Well, the locker room is a huge locker room. I believe that Antonio, once he's traded, he'll be motivated. He'll be motivated because he's still trying to get a new contract. And there's certain things as far as football players and him getting to the job, working, doing that. He's going to put his best foot forward. Man, Antonio, it's like Randy Moss when he left Oakland. Man, when he went to New England, that wasn't the Randy Moss they got. They didn't have to worry about him not being on time, him not running the right route, him freelancing, some of the things that people had said about him before he got there. So I believe on Antonio, he will have a career check on this, and he will make sure that he's doing all the right thing because that's the way he used to do things in Pittsburgh before he became a big-time star.
But that's Bill Belichick. There aren't a lot of Bill Belichicks, a lot of players that will actually change who they are, how they do things because of the head coach. Do you think that factors in at all? When you think the quarterback factors in, does the head coach as well?
I think it's similar to the Le'Veon Bell discussion we had, which is it depends on the type of locker room you have as far as is he going to, the moment he gets there, become a de facto leader face of the team, or do you already have those people in place via your coach or your quarterback? I want to throw one wild card team at you, CC, because this doesn't, by the way, they don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback. They got a young quarterback. They don't have a Hall of Fame coach. They got a first-year coach. But what they do have is the number one pick of the draft in the Arizona Cardinals. If they trade back, if they decide we're not taking a quarterback, obviously, at number one, our best value is to get a bunch of extra draft picks for a team that wants to trade up to get Haskins or Kyler or whomever the number one player is. When you have Larry Fitzgerald there in his final year, you have a quarterback in Josh Rosen that they are trying to build around but obviously needs a lot of help. You have the warm indoor climate in Arizona. Is that, to you, more of a combustible situation or a situation with Fitzy there that could work out quite well?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a more combustible situation. He's not competitive. Arizona's not going to be competitive. Is that the type of environment that he wants to go in to try to finish his career? He's in love with social media. He's in love with the gram. He showed up to training camp in a helicopter. Like, is that really what the Arizona Cardinals need with a new unproven coach? That, I mean, there's going to be a question about control when you have Cliff Kingsbury and his young age taking over NFL locker room. He wasn't successful in college. So I don't think Steve Kine, the general manager, because he has taken some chances on some players, I don't think that's the type of gift you want to give Larry Fitzgerald in his last season to bring Antonio, who you're talking about polar opposites of each other. Now, these are polar opposites of each other.
All right, we'll stick with wide receivers on the other side. Coming up, are the Giants making the right choice holding on to OBJ? That's next on First Things First. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify. Tomorrow, it's the game of the year in the Big East as Phil Booth leads Villanova against Marcus Howard, number 10 Marquette. The action tips off at 9 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Our pal Jay Wright needs this win.
Go, Jay. Time for us to go viral. Last night, the Lakers fell to the lowly Grizzlies, 110-105. LeBron had a triple-double, but was just 8 of 23 from the field. And this fan trolled the king at the Memphis postgame show, holding up a sign that read, LeBron will ruin Space Jam, like he did the Lakers.
Oh, that's well done. That's a good troll job.
Cruel.
I like the, if you're watching League Pass, a bunch of teams have their pre- and post-game stuff in the arena with the fans coming out. Our friend Chris Mannix, who's been on the show obviously a bunch, when he does stuff with the Celtics, they do a similar setup like that. I like that. And that's a good sign. A little game.
Mannix will be out here in a little bit. He can tell us all about those guys and that sign. But he won't. Time for some stories to start your morning, starting with one of the big names coming out of the NFL draft, Kyler Murray. A lot of concerns about the quarterback's stature may soon be alleviated. According to reports, he is up to 206 pounds. See, how important is Kyler's weight come combine time?
Weight is very, very important as a quarterback, especially when you're undersized. We just haven't seen many guys under 210 pounds in the NFL. That is a standard. There is a height standard, that being around 6'1", and there's a weight standard, and that being around 215 pounds. So being under that, and if his hand size, which I think is going to be very small, typically small people got small feet, small hands.
So this is the only thing, though.
It will affect.
This is the only thing he can control, though. Between now and the combine, he can't get taller.
To a certain degree. Because you only have so much when you're your frame.
Right. You can only carry so much. My point is that he's not getting taller, no matter how big he grows his hair. And his hands aren't getting bigger. So it is he is showing the attention that he understands the thing. Control your controllables.
Yeah, I do have some hand exercise that I show my kids that fudge the test a little bit.
Oh, so really? Then
it actually makes it a little bit longer.
Oh, because
you get your thumb down. Because
joint.
They go this way when they measure.
Call Kyler.
I got you. For a small fee, small person.
Course. To the NBA now. James Harden scored 28 points in a win against the Hawks last night. That snaps his 32-game streak of scoring at least 30 points. Going 0 for 10 from deep didn't help his cause in this one. But, Nick, how impressive was this streak?
This was all-time stuff, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is – I don't think this streak will be matched anytime soon. By soon, I mean in years and years in the NBA. Like, there's a reason that it was Wilt Chamberlain's alone, and Wilt Chamberlain's streak is untouchable. So this is essentially the modern-day record. And most importantly, team 22-10 during the streak. Like, I mean, this was a team that took advantage, or 21-11, pardon me, during the streak, took advantage of it. It was going to come to an end, came to an end last night.
This streak was out of necessity.
Yes.
I mean, they had a couple frontline players banged up, and he took over. I don't think it can be duplicated because of the durability. We'll never give James Harden, but in this, he showed unusual athleticism and ability to be durable every single night doing that. Outstanding. Legendary stuff.
All right, to the Hawks side of this one, Trae Young lit it up last night. 36 points, including 8 three-pointers in Atlanta's loss to Houston. Nick, what'd you make of Trae's night?
And they were all deep threes. I mean, we're showing them. None of these were feet close to the line.
I think he had 6 beyond 27 feet.
Absolutely. He had 8 made threes, all of them 26 feet or longer. And as you mentioned, 6 longer than 27 feet. If people haven't been watching the Hawks, which I don't blame you if you haven't been, the weakness in Trae Young's game so far this year has actually been his three-point efficiency, believe it or not. He's been an excellent playmaker. He's been better at the rim than people thought. Mm-hmm. He just hadn't been able to find his stroke early on. I really liked him coming out of OU. I thought what he did his freshman year was spectacular, and now we're seeing it click in for him just a bit.
Yeah, and if he needs to have that type of range, because with a small frame, if you can have that Steph Curry, there's only a few people, that 26, 27, 28 feet, it makes it very difficult for the defense, because as you mentioned, he was better in the lane than we expected.
He's one of the many rookies that's just getting overshadowed because of how great Luka's been.
Moving on to the Celtics now, their woes starting to outshine their pros. They've dropped 4 of their last 6, 5th place in the East, and thus more stories coming out on their pursuit of Anthony Davis. According to reports, they are prepared to offer literally anyone on their roster this offseason, including Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Boston also, remember, has an array of picks to offer the Pelicans. Nick, what do you think? Should the Celtics blow up their roster to trade for Anthony Davis?
Well, it's the only chance they have to trade for Anthony Davis. Like, let's make this very clear. If they weren't going to include Jason Tatum and other pieces as well, then the story is the Celtics are not going to pursue Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Because the 2021 Memphis pick ain't getting it done. Jaylen Brown ain't getting it done. And so what this story didn't say is they will do this even if Kyrie leaves. That's going to be the real question for Danny Ainge, and I think I know the answer to that, which is if Kyrie leaves, will you still trade away Jason Tatum and others for what could be a one-year rental on Anthony Davis? You can make a strong argument you shouldn't. The argument you should is he'll come here, he'll love it, he'll love the culture, he'll love the fans, he'll want to stay. It's a big risk. But it's also, as we see more of Tatum and Brown, and we see more of their young players, the risk to me becomes slightly smaller because Jason Tatum, I never said that he was a surefire scoring champ at some point in his future. I know a lot of people thought he was. What is Jason Tatum's best case scenario upside? What is Jaylen Brown's best case scenario upside? Those are real questions because we know the Lakers are going to offer everything. The Bulls might offer a guy like Lauri Markkanen, who is right now statistically better than any of the young players the Celtics have throughout his career. So there are some other factors to be at play here.
The Celtics are very fortunate that this deal wasn't done before the trade deadline. So they got it where they wanted to, where they can play out this year with Kyrie have a chance to try to get to the finals, because that would be a very successful season with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward coming back. But to me, if Kyrie leaves, I can't trade for Anthony Davis. I can't trade everything on a rental. Like, I understand what happened in OKC with Paul George. Very unique situation and great for the NBA, and Paul George is thriving there. I don't believe that Kawhi is going to do the same thing in Toronto. Now, if we have back-to-back top five players that on a rental have decided that they're going to stay in Toronto, is a smaller market, less than advantageous than other markets, but, you know, that would be huge news in the NBA, back-to-back, Paul George, Kawhi, then I think that Boston, but I don't think that's going to happen. Right. So for me, I wouldn't take the chance, because I believe that there's better landing spots. You mentioned Chicago. New York would be on the books because Kyrie would be there. KD would be there. So, yes, like I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't trade everything, losing Kyrie Irving, trade Tatum. I wouldn't do that.
But I want Celtics fans and everyone to understand that we know what New Orleans turned down for Anthony Davis, right? All the Lakers young guys, multiple picks. So they clearly believe they can do better than that offer. Well, let's just show, you don't need a blind reveal here, let's just show the young guys versus the young guys. Because Ingram, by the way, who's played great in the last couple weeks, Ingram and Kuzma versus Tatum and Brown, it was just a given that obviously Tatum and Brown are a better duo. Okay, if they are, they have not, the per game stats aren't showing it. And with Ingram coming on strong at the end of the year and Tatum and Brown trailing off to a degree, there is an element of, well, can Boston even get in the game? If they turn down from the Lakers, right. Ingram, Kuzma, I'm not even including Lonzo Ball, who, depending on the executive you talk to, either think he's a very good prospect or not a very good prospect. Those three guys plus picks. So for the Celtics, is it Tatum, Brown, and the Memphis pick plus Marcus Smart to make the salaries work? That would be the type of deal Danny Ainge has never made. Danny Ainge has never been the all-in
move. But is that the one he'd have to do? If you're the Pelicans, you'd want that or more, right?
Well, given what they turned down from the Lakers, you would think that that is the standard that they are setting. They didn't turn down that Lakers offer to sell low on Anthony Davis this summer. Right. That much I know.
All right, let's move on to Odell Beckham. Our guy Jay Glazer caused a stir when he made a bold prediction that Odell might be traded from the Giants this offseason. But according to reports, that's not happening. Odell Beckham is not on the trading block. Keep in mind, Big Blue gave Odell a 5-year extension last summer. Chris, are the Giants making the right choice holding on to Odell Beckham Jr.?
They are making the right choice in holding on to him, because the hardest decision was been, am I going to give him this new contract with the big signing bonus? When you see these big contracts in the NFL, man, that first year, year and a half, that's the tough part. That's the part you have to stomach. You're hoping they don't get hurt, have some career-threatening injury, but that's the part where the signing bonus and all those things, like, once you get through that, man, you start getting to the better part of the contract where you are getting a great player at a good price. So, no, I wouldn't give up. Odell hadn't done anything to me that would say, you know, I'm ready to move on from him. He's not in the news. He's working on his game. He's trying to get better. And I believe that the Giants did a good job by removing this from his mindset. Because as a wide receiver, man, you don't want our minds to be drifting in the offseason. Because Odell, he could entertain that real, send me to New England.
Yeah.
Oh, send me somewhere else. Oh, you don't think, send me to the L.A. Rams, which was on the board last year before they traded for Cooks there at wide receiver. So Giants did a great job by putting it out there. No, we're not trading them. The Giants got too many holes. Offensive line is awful. Defensively, they need a cornerback. They need another rusher. They need a linebacker. So now if I trade Odell, I got another big hole that I have to fill. There's no one on that roster that's ready, a number two ready to be a number one, a three ready to be a two. No, they need Odell Beckham and Barkley. That is the cornerstone of their franchise. Draft yourself a quarterback. This is not real hard stuff.
Well, that's the other part of it, is if you might draft a quarterback, you think that quarterback is in a better position to succeed or worse with Odell or without Odell? This is, listen, there are fair criticisms about Odell Beckham, and God knows this show and every show in America has talked about them a lot over the last few years. But the idea that he's not a winner or that he can't be a part of a winning team is ludicrous. Now, does Odell care a little too much about what is said about him publicly? I think he does, and I've told him that. That, like, man, you can't worry about what folks in my position are saying. Does Odell wear his emotions on his sleeve on the sideline to a degree that can almost be a distraction? Sure, I think that's a fair criticism. I think he'd acknowledge that. Doesn't mean he's going to be able to fix it, by the way, but I think he'd acknowledge that. But that's not a sign of someone that doesn't care about winning. That's not a sign of someone that is all me, me, me. It might be a sign of immaturity to a degree.
Listen, you can't look inside of a person. And I get sick and tired of wide receivers because we deserve a lot of things. The nicknames, the divas, the prima donnas, things like that. Yeah, can we be a distraction? But when you start saying things personal like, oh, you're not a winner. Well, what kind of machine do you have that looks inside of it and say, oh, he's not a winner? On a football team that's got a bunch of selfish people, but you know something? They don't have speaking roles. And sometimes they're offensive linemen and defensive linemen. You know, some people aren't interviewing them, but you know, they're just as selfish as wide receivers. Quarterbacks, they're more selfish than wide receivers, but we don't care to even talk about that. So, man, talking about people who want to win and all those type of things, there is no type of test that we can give to a person to say, hey, you know something? This guy wants to win more than it. When you train your body to play at a high level and you play wide receiver, how am I going to help the team? Oh, you want me to be some big physical blocker? Get out of here with that mess. The way I'm going to help this football team is by getting first downs and getting touchdowns. And those are recorded by the numbers. So the numbers become important in wide receivers doing their job. So, yes, they should think about the numbers because they're in a numbers business, and that's the way to be evaluate how you're doing as a wide receiver.
A couple weeks ago, you mentioned something I didn't think about, that you thought Odell was one injury away from being considered perhaps injury prone just because in his short career he has sustained a couple of injuries. Is that a concern at all if you're the Giants holding on to him?
To me, it's
not. Factor that in.
To me, it's not just because they aren't. He's not a guy like, with respect, Sammy Watkins, who it's like, man, another soft tissue injury.
Yep.
Another foot injury. He got his leg broken
right.
2 years ago.
All football-related injuries. And if the Giants felt that way, they wouldn't have locked him up to this deal. Now, this is just something that we were talking about. Like, he can't afford to get nicked again.
He can't miss. He misses the vast majority of 2017, missed the tail end of 2018. If in 2019 he misses time again, you say, okay, you know, that's a trend at this point. But when a guy gets paid and still is near tears at times about the losses, you can say, listen, part of being a professional is understanding the ups and the downs. There are fair knocks about immaturity, about growth, about dealing with the long season, being a leader. But the idea that whether we're 5-11 or 11-5, as long as I'm getting my money, that as long as I'm getting my fame, that is, I know the player. Chris knows the player very well. That's not who he is.
Let me tell you, I want a bunch of guys in the locker room or in their car, because for a person I knew, it was about the car. I wasn't going to be crying in that locker room. But I got to my car, and it was many days I cried there. I couldn't stand losing. I wasn't a good loser. But I'll take a bunch of them compared to a bunch of guys trying to celebrate. We going to the strip club compared to, man, this is my business. I take a lot of pride in it, and that's why you see that type of reaction. Yeah, I wish that I would have handled it better. And as my career went on, I ultimately end up handling it better. But, man, losing sucks. It sucks in this league when you work all week and then don't get paid off on Sunday. That means he's not there just for the check, because if he was doing that, then that would be criticism that would be warranted. Man, he is a winner. He wants to play, and you can see that it's eaten away. But if you look at the rookie campaign of Barkley and think that Odell Beckham being on that field did not help that kid achieve that, then you're missing a lot of what football is about.
All right, take a break. Coming up, let's talk some Lakers. Does this team have a shot at the playoffs after losing to Memphis last night? That and more ahead on First and Free. Back to here first things first. Senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, Chris Mannix, joins us. Hey,
what
Chris.
Up, what's up,
friend
man?
Of the show.
Friend of the
friend
show.
Friend of the show.
It's Mannix. M-A.
Hey, bro. Don't be talking about stuff.
Sorry,
we do.
Is that?
That was a
that's
year
off the
ago,
air.
See? That was a year ago, man.
We'll get
that's
that
his
cut.
Charm, we'll Chris. Cut. He just likes to okay. massage the names a little
okay.
bit.
Okay, now
and we're just starting to get along.
Me and you versus McManus. Let's go.
Let's talk 76ers. They took down the Pelicans last night without their star center, Joel Embiid. He missed his third straight game with a sore knee. Not to worry, though, the Sixers were helped handily by Tobias Harris and his 29 points. Bit of a blow, though, for Philly. Boban had to leave the game with a knee injury. He'll have an MRI later today. Chris Mannix, what has to happen, do you think, for the Sixers to go on a run at this point?
Well, there are a few things. I don't think they're wed to one. The rotation's got to be figured out. I mean, right now, mm-hmm. Brett Brown's kind of all over the place with, you know, what he's doing and who he's mixing and matching lines, which is understandable. I mean, they changed up their entire team twice this season. Jimmy Butler and then Tobias Harris. That's number one. The shooting from Ben Simmons, from unsuspecting outlets on that team, that's got to happen. But if I'm looking at the number one thing, it's got to be Jimmy Butler being assertive in the fourth quarter of these games. Jimmy Butler, his shooting numbers are down a little bit since he came over from the Timberwolves. He's only taken about 13.5 shots per game. He did take 16 last night. It was only 5 for 16 from the floor. But in the previous games, if you look at some of those numbers, it's seven
it's
shots.
A lot of 11- and 13-point games.
Yeah, and like he's the one guy on that team that has to be able to take over games late in it. He's the only guy really that can do it. Mm-hmm. I love Joel Embiid. You can go through him quarters 1 through 3.5. Ben Simmons can go to the basket, create offense. But if you need one bucket, it's got to be Jimmy Butler going to get it. And if he's not, they're not going to have much of a chance.
One thing that I think that they're able to see with Joel Embiid being out, because I believe that Tobias Harris is an underrated scorer, because not only you can run offense for him, but he can get his shot, go off the dribble, can get to the rim. I like the ability to build, experiment with him, because Jimmy Butler, I understand that, and I respect that. And I think Philadelphia did a great job after the first trade. Those first few games, when it came down to crunch situations, they called Jimmy Butler's number, and he came through. I like the fact that let's reestablish that, because we made another change on this roster, trying to get the feel for it. But I like the fact in these last 20 games, let's reestablish Jimmy Butler as he's going to be our guy to close out, because you're going to need in the playoffs. Man, they call it different. You need a veteran player, and I can understand why you would say Jimmy Butler is the only guy outside of Joel Embiid, because Joel Embiid's going to draw some fouls, but what type of whistle is he going to get in the playoffs? Jimmy Butler is that X factor. He can be the closer.
He didn't get those whistles last year against Aaron Baines in the first round. He didn't get those whistles.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Baines, because he's on the Boston Celtics, and this is where the key is for the Sixers, is that they are staring at, it would appear, a potential first-round matchup with Boston. Now, with no Embiid, the Boban injury is big, by the way. Mm-hmm. They would have lost to Miami last week if Boban didn't have a monster game. He has been very good for them in spots. With no Embiid and no Boban for the next few games, we would imagine, their next two games are OKC and Golden State. Like, okay, so you're without your best player, without your backup center, you're already mm-hmm. a thin team. So that would be very easy for them all of a sudden to flip-flop with Boston, 4-5 to 5-4. And we know that Philly, for all of Boston's struggles, Boston sure seems to have Philly's number over the last couple of years. There are some issues there, right? So how can they change it this season in the playoffs? The answer is what you said, is Jimmy Butler. Because late in playoff games, Jimmy Butler is what every great team has to have. A guy you do not have to run a play for, a guy you can clear it out for. It is what the Celtics were missing last year without Kyrie Irving in the postseason. It is go down the list. It is mm-hmm. what the Rockets have with Harden, what the Warriors have with Steph or KD, a guy who can just go do it. I like Tobias Harris. I don't love him as my 2 minutes left in a 3-point playoff game. Give it to him.
Absolutely. I can understand that. Yes.
And so, and Embiid, it's tough to run those plays for centers. Even when Shaq was in his prime, it's tough to just dump it down to him late in playoff games, because guys just wrap you up and say, you know what I mean? Beat us at the free throw line if you get the call. So Jimmy Butler's the key. And the reality is Jimmy Butler, the best part about him since he came to Philly has been he hasn't seemed aggrieved by his lack of major role, but he actually needs to take on a bigger role down the stretch. in late in games. We said this a few weeks ago. It's true today. The first three quarters, you said it just right, Mannix. First three quarters are Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons' time. The end of games has to be Jimmy Butler's time, because that's also when Ben Simmons will become a liability, because you're going to be playing 5-on-4 because he's not going to provide the outside shooting. And as much as I like what J.J. Redick has done, before they got Butler, they were running the end of game stuff through J.J. Redick because they had no other option, which shows their limitations in that spot. So the answer is absolutely Jimmy Butler.
How much does it help the Sixers that the Celtics are struggling? And there's, you don't know when Oladipo's coming back with the Pacers, so there's a little more wiggle room.
Oladipo's done for the year.
Okay, so there you go. So, I mean, there's a little more freedom and leeway there on the top of the East.
You know, but the Celtics have owned them, but the Sixers haven't been good against anybody at the top of the East. I think they're 3-8 against the top four teams in the Eastern Conference, and they'd only have four games left against them. And look, the sense of urgency in Philadelphia has to be sky high right now, because for a lot of the pieces involved, there's a ton at stake. I mean, Brett Brown at some point has to prove he can win at a high level in the postseason. The Sixers ownership group is preparing to spend maybe the most money of any team in the history of the NBA if they bring all these guys back and eventually max out Ben Simmons. If you get knocked off in the second round, that might give everybody else kind of reason for pause. Jimmy Butler, if he struggles with this group in the playoffs, what does he do? Does he decide, look, maybe this isn't for me. I'm going to take my talents on a four-year contract somewhere else. So you can say it for a lot of the teams in the Eastern Conference playoffs, Toronto, Boston, but Philadelphia might have as much stake as anyone in this playoffs.
And you mentioned in the second round, if Indiana, to their credit, despite no Oladipo, is staying strong.
And their schedule stinks in the next week.
If Indiana stays in the three spot, then Boston or Philly, one of them's going home in the first round.
Yep.
Like, and so that's the other reason why it's not
I would be shocked if Indiana was able to hold on to that three spot.
I would be too.
But their schedule, like, they have the next five games, I was looking at it, they should win all five. Like, they could go 5-0 in the next five.
I would be too, Chris, but I thought when Oladipo went down, they were going to fall apart that moment. Instead, they have won at the same level without him as they did with him. It would be very interesting to see the final quarter of the season if they can hold that spot there.
All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, is there a surprise quarterback about to overtake Dwayne Haskins and Kyler Murray in the draft? That's next on First Things First. Welterweight world champ Showtime, Sean Porter, defending his belt for the first time live in primetime March 9th, only on Fox. Time now for us to go viral. Check out this video. Comes our way from Ukraine. Oh, this is as athletic as it gets.
Lord.
Watch it. The impossible backflip. Oh.
No.
That is core strength about as good as you'll see.
What about his rotator cuff?
Yes, but look, what do you think stopping him? You know, I don't know.
Hold on. But your point is the double jointedness or?
The strength. The strength in his upper arms to be able to hold him up like that. Jenna's more concerned about his stomach. I mean, the stomach's part of it, but.
It's incredible.
I mean, he's got some ridiculous arm strength.
That is incredible.
I think it's Photoshop. I don't think human beings can do that.
Video? You Photoshop the video?
Yeah. But have you seen movies, Jenna?
Okay,
I mean, special effects.
It's your birthday, Jenna. It's your birthday.
Give me a pass.
It's your birthday.
Photoshop the video? When did that technology come out?
My new thing this year is I'm not going to believe everything everyone tells me. I've been very
vocal
this past year.
This is the problem, though. You believe so much stuff that other people have been telling you. Nick and I have been trying to correct it for the last year and a half.
I don't know what to believe.
No.
Just you guys.
We can't give you misinformation. That would really pollute the tank.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to believe.
Just real quick, since we mentioned movies, it didn't win best documentary this year, but it was really good. I thought it should have. Jurassic Park, really well done. Documentary film.
Okay, not a documentary. That is a real movie. Okay, real movie, and it came out like 10 years ago. Back to the NFL.
That one was fake, but the new one.
Heading into this weekend's combine, the top two quarterbacks available are presumed to be Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, but according to reports, they're not even everyone's top two. Other quarterbacks on the top of some teams' boards include former Missouri quarterback Drew Locke and former Duke quarterback Daniel Jones. All right, CC, it's an easy question. Who is the best quarterback in this year's draft?
It is the NFL, right? NFL draft, right?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Okay, Haskins.
Yeah.
Because if it was some other type of draft, then I might be able to make a case for some of these other guys. But if it was, I can't remember the last time that we had a quarterback, if it's ever happened, threw for 50 touchdowns from a Power 5 conference, let alone being from a school like Ohio State, that they would question, is this guy a first rounder? Like, I wonder, what are people looking at? Like, what kind of football did you watch last year to not know Dwayne Haskins and what he did with that Ohio State team? He's the best quarterback in over – they've been playing football over 120 years. He's the best quarterback. We've had hundreds of pros. He's the best quarterback that's ever played for the institution. His ability to be able to read defenses, his ability to be able to deliver the football at all angles. He's got a rifle arm. He's a great leader. He took over. He's a redshirt sophomore, but he took over in the Michigan game as a redshirt freshman. When JT Barrett gets hurt late in the game, they have a third and long. Ryan Day, who has a tremendous amount of confidence, and I don't believe people are giving him enough credit, he drops back. Watch the quick set. He rifles the ball down the sideline, third and 13, puts the ball in that small window because this coaching staff had tremendous confidence, even though JT Barrett, as a four-year starter there, was there. They knew the offense was going to get better. He transformed that offense. They've never run an offense like that at Ohio State. They ran it because of his skill set. And I just believe his overall football IQ, how he's able to recognize his defenses, and the impact that Ryan Day, because people aren't giving, people think Ryan Day, oh, he's the head coach of Ohio State that people don't know. But he's also got a pro background. He comes from the Chip Kelly coaching tree. Chip Kelly, he was a quarterback at New Hampshire when Chip Kelly was the coach there.
Oh, yeah.
And then eventually went on to meet up with Chip Kelly in Philadelphia and went on with him to San Francisco. So when you talk to Ryan Day, he talks about, when you talk about Haskins, he talks about quarterbacks that he's seen, and that being Matt Ryan and that being Sam Bradford. The accuracy that he throws the ball and the type of leadership. And I think both of those guys are great examples in their pro career of doing both. Sam Bradford not able to stay healthy, but no one ever questioned his overall accuracy. So I just think when it's all said and done at the combine, people will start to see, wow, this guy, he's really into football. He's the face of the franchise. He's a legitimate 6'3". He has a cannon of an arm. So I look for Dwayne Haskins to get better in pro football. Typically, we see the other way around. He's just now getting started. He's 21, doesn't turn 22 until May. Man, I mean, his future is very, very bright, and I think the brightest of all the quarterbacks that we have in this year's draft.
The idea that Daniel Jones from Duke or Drew Locke from Missouri are anywhere in the discussion here is ludicrous. It's patently ludicrous. Those two guys combined for 50 touchdowns on the year, combined, and for just over 6,000 passing yards. Haskins himself had 50 touchdowns and nearly 5,000 passing yards. Okay, so that's first of all. Second of all, he checks every box but experience. The only box he does, he is the right height.
Yep.
He is the right style. He has the right numbers. He has the right intangibles. He went to a big-time school. He won at a high level. This is the area where even in 2019, you sense a bit of the yeah, but with the black quarterback. Because there is no world that exists where a white Dwayne Haskins with this profile at that school with that production, if all of a sudden in a black Drew Locke, they were like, you know what, maybe Drew Locke out of Missouri is the better NFL pick. Like this is, and we can't even apply it to, it's not like, well, we don't know about his style. So we saw a similar thing, Cam Newton, when he just ran through college football at Auburn, and then there was a quarterback from Missouri named Blaine Gabbert, and they're like, you know what, maybe he's the better prospect. That was ludicrous, but at least in that instance, you had the small excuse of, well, Cam is so much of a runner. Mm-hmm. How much of that? This guy never runs. I think he has less than 200 career rushing yards. He is a prototypical drop-back passer. Now, if Kyler's height isn't a killer for him, Kyler could be an interesting I'll be interested to see how their careers match up, because at least Kyler was as productive and successful at the
collegiate level. Well, Kyler's the only quarterback they should compare.
Correct.
Now, you can't compare because the height, 5'9 to 6'3, but based on the way they threw the football in perform, he's the only guy that you can compare Haskins to as a thrower. Forget, we know that they're not the same types of runners.
So what are scouts talking about then? So why are we even having this discussion if it seems like it's so obvious?
Every year, there's always a couple quarterbacks, and I say this position more than any other because everyone's always looking for the Montana for the Brady. But they bump him up. These guys were drafted appropriately. Joe Montana was not a high draft pick. Tom Brady was not a high draft pick. But because of the position and because the need, you see all this extra hype right before the draft of all these guys, they're going to be great. If you're not great at throwing the football in college, it's very, very, very rare to impossible to get better throwing the ball in pro football.
Go ahead.
Isn't this sort of what happened with Josh Allen a little bit? That he came from a small school, wasn't that successful, but he fit all the prototypes. He was tall. He had a strong arm. He looked like the quarterback that all the John Elways want to hire. And then you see how they struggle a little bit in the NFL.
Listen, you don't the thing that is over 40 years of NFL history, we have documented proof on, the hardest thing to improve from the college level to the professional level is your completion percentage. The one guy in recent history that's gone real high and done it is Matt Stafford. He was not a very accurate collegiate quarterback, and he has become more accurate, even though he's still not the most accurate professional quarterback. You could maybe argue also Brett Favre. And Favre, though, is kind of a one-of-one story in a lot of ways in NFL history. If you are not accurate at the college level, with guy open throwing lanes, more less complex offenses, worse defenses, how are you going to get? Now you can get your arm can get a bit stronger. You can learn more football. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you can make better decisions. There's a lot of things you obviously improve on. Accuracy. Haskins completed 70% of his passes. And I'm also a little biased in just because as much as you respected JT Barrett, the only four-year captain at your university ever, right?
Yes.
That I was at the Ohio State-Penn State game with Chris and you at the midway through, not this past season, but the season before. And you were talking about Haskins then.
Yeah.
You were talking about this freshman we have who's going to be the best thrower Ohio State's ever had. So I've had a closer eye on him than most, but the numbers jump off the page.
And he's been special. He's got a special swag about him. He's got a special leadership. Go back and watch the videos of him going to an Ohio State camp, telling the coaches there, man, I'm going to be the quarterback for Ohio State. Man, we were lucky to get him. He was committed to the University of Maryland. Urban Meyer convinced him to be able to come over. Ryan Day's impact on him and what he's learned in pro football and implementing that into the Ohio State offense this year, I believe he's a special kid. I believe it's just now getting started. And if there's a quarterback you want to take a chance on in this year's draft, if there's a thing, Haskins is going to be my guy. All right, because I have just seen it, and sometimes it's not in the numbers. Sometimes you just know. You just know about it when you see it or when you feel it, and I just have that feeling about Haskins. And it's not about Ohio State. It's about a kid who is special throwing the football, just like Baker Mayfield was special throwing the football last year.
I was just about to just put a button on this. So there's only two quarterbacks since you and I have known each other the last 3 years, college quarterbacks, I've heard you talk about to this level. Because, listen, I loved Rosen coming out of school. Like, I get a little overexcited about college quarterbacks. You have a very high threshold for it. Those two, it wasn't Darnold. Those two are Baker Mayfield and this kid. Baker just proved the entire world either wrong or right, depending on what you said about him, with what he did with Cleveland. We'll see what Haskins does. But you, listen, you have been talking about this kid for the last, since he was a high schooler, and what he did this year at Ohio State was break all, not only the Ohio State records, all of Drew Brees' Big Ten records.
Yeah.
It is a question of who should be the second quarterback taking the draft, not the first.
Who should be the first. All right, take a break. Coming up, did LeBron James kill the Lakers by trying to orchestrate a trade? That is next on First Things First. Back to LeBron and the Lakers now. Not a great night for him or the team. Despite having a triple-double, LeBron, just 8 for 23, struggled on the defensive end. But wait, there's more. According to a rival executive, LeBron, quote, killed the chemistry for this young Lakers team and should not have been so public about his desire to land Anthony Davis. Nick, what's your reaction to this?
All morning long, when we've talked about the game last night, the Lakers right now, I've been very critical of LeBron. He does not look like the best player in the world right now. He is not in basketball shape for the first time that I've ever seen. He's the heaviest he's ever been. He's the worst defensively he's ever been. All of that is fair. All of that is real. All of that is one of the reasons that since the All-Star break, they have these two horrible losses. But this here is ludicrous. It's nonsense, and it is the type of criticism that only LeBron gets. Who's getting criticized for the Celtics? By the way, they haven't been great since the trade deadline. Those players, we talked about it today.
that any of them are on the table. Danny Ainge getting killed for that? And if he is, it's the GM who would be getting killed. But, of course, he's not.
Well, because it's also after the trade deadline. So the younger players, they don't have as much to worry about because they know they're there until at least after the season.
So But it's after the deadline for the Lakers, too.
Well, I mean, but the whole roster of the Celtics was not involved in the trade by name before the trade deadline. So that it's totally different than the Lakers' younger players. They were said by name, all these players, and it was kind of co-signed by LeBron saying that, yes, I want to play with AD.
But so this is where
that part is true.
That part is true. That last part is the part I take issue with. LeBron was asked about Anthony Davis. He said, of course I want to play with. I've always wanted to play with great players. And then he said to Tanya Ganguly, the LA Times reporter, ask me if I want to play with Kevin Durant. Ask me if I want to play with Kyrie Irving. He made it very clear, I want to play with great players.
But also when you say that, leadership is tough because you have to realize it's just like a relationship. And when you go to counseling, man, which I have been to enough for a number of different reasons, but it's not only what you say. It's what do the other people hear that are in this relationship? So, yes, LeBron might have been 100% in that. Ask me about KD. Ask me about Steph. Ask me about Wilt Chamberlain. Mm-hmm. All those things. But what did the younger players hear? Because what they might have heard was, he don't want to play with me. All right? So you have to be careful in being a leader. And that's part of the responsibility of being a leader is the echo of your voice, it carries. And what goes into other people's ear is not always what you're saying.
Fair enough. But he's not the GM. When you say all these players were included in the trade, he was not the one calling Dell Demps. He was not the one leaking the trades. He was not the one proposing the trades. As I like to remind people, LeBron is not the puppet master that runs the entire NBA, runs Anthony Davis's trade request, runs the Lakers front office. If he were, I'm guessing Luke Walton might not still be the coach there.
But he did have the power if he wanted to, just like free agency. The way he addressed it said, I'm not going to talk about my free agency until the end of the season. He could have easily said, I'm enjoying my teammates here. All right. I'm not going to talk about any potential trades. I'm going to enjoy my teammates. We're going to make the best of this team right here. When you allow the Anthony Davis conversation to take place, you can't control how other people are going. It's tough being LeBron. But those other players who aren't used to that, it's a tough adjustment for them in pro basketball, having LeBron James on the roster. Every group of players that have been with LeBron since he came into the league, all those veterans who had inherited the king, coming back to Cleveland as the number one pick, when he went to Miami, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, man, that was not an easy transition for them or the other players surrounding it. When he went back to Cleveland, players had to make an adjustment. It rubbed them the wrong way. And in Los Angeles, if we didn't think that, because this is a people business and people are about emotions, it's the same way in Los Angeles. So we should have known there was going to be some type of effect on the people in Los Angeles.
You don't think the Lakers would be in a better position right now, record-wise, had this trade not gotten leaked, had the young players not found out that their name was just splashed all over?
I think they might be, but he's not the general manager.
But do you see how if just the concept of Anthony Davis possibly coming here comes out and is leaked, and he answers the question, okay, yes, I would like to play with him, who else are they going to trade for Anthony Davis?
Okay, so I just want, but again, I want people to follow the full logic of this. Was it LeBron's doing that Anthony Davis demanded a trade?
No.
Was it LeBron's doing that the Lakers were, by all accounts, one of his four preferred destinations?
No.
Okay. And so if LeBron says nothing, but it is still reported the Lakers are trying to trade for Anthony Davis, do Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram think they're not involved? And by the way, Ingram's playing the best basketball of his career the last 10 days. But regardless, to your point, he could have said, I'm not talking about any
right.
of it. Do you really believe that would have fixed the Lakers' ills?
No, I don't believe it, but we're past it now. And if I can go back and if I can put the toothpaste back in it, I would try to do it a different way. He wouldn't be the only person. Magic Johnson. because Magic Johnson is the one who got everything started. LeBron was trying to ask questions. Now, as a leader, I know general managers, but I can follow that up because I'm dealing with the players every day. Magic's not dealing with the players every day. So LeBron could have trumped that by saying, regardless of what they say about the front office, I fully support what they're going to do. But right now, it's about me and my teammates. Me in Miami, didn't they have that that number count, 15 all in? Like, they have these little slogans. What kind of slogan can LeBron have for these guys? Hey, man, don't loan you no money because you ain't going to be here for a long time. Like, what could he do from a team building standpoint? Because people have talked about LeBron being as the best at team building activities that he can do. How can you do that when everyone is potentially going to be traded? So LeBron could have done better. Magic could have done better. And as a professional, it's hard for these younger players. They could have done better. So you can put blame on each aspect of it.
The reality to me is what ruined the Lakers, or what has ruined the Lakers up to this point, are those 18 games LeBron James didn't play and how he's been since he came back. When you go 6-12 without LeBron, that includes right after that great Golden State win, losses to the Kings and the Clippers, the two teams you're chasing. And you follow that up by getting blown out by Minnesota. You lose at home to Cleveland. And then maybe the single worst loss any team has in the NBA this year. They lost at home to a Knicks team that was in the midst of a 1-34 run of regulation basketball games. The one was in Los Angeles against the Lakers. You win a couple of those games. You win three of those games. You are right now in the playoffs. And nobody's panicked. So to me, these are all secondary, even tertiary issues to what they did when LeBron was hurt and how they have played since LeBron came back.
I believe that in them being injured, you can't overcome injuries. And they had a number of injuries. Lonzo's injury, very important. Rondo being injured. So you're going to have a lack of chemistry. But it really comes down to what should be blamed was how this roster was put together. It was going to be exposed. When you add Lance, Rondo, KCP, those are your big moves in the offseason. So ultimately, we're talking about it now in February, but we would have been talking about it in March or April, because ultimately this roster is not talented enough to be able to help LeBron James build to win his next NBA championship. So it's who are we going to blame for it? How this roster was put together, ultimately, we were going to be able to see holes in it, and we're doing it now in February.
All right, let's take a break, leave it there. Coming up is Kyler Murray putting concerns about his size to rest. Next on First Things First. All right, fine, let's talk some Sixers. They took down the Pelicans last night without their star center, Joel Embiid. He missed his third straight game with a sore knee. Not to worry, the Sixers were helped handily by Tobias Harris and his 29 points. Bit of a blow for Philly, though. Boban had to leave the game with a knee injury. He will have an MRI later today. CeCe, what do you think now has to happen for this Sixers team if they are going to go on a playoff run?
Well, I think a couple things. I think Tobias Harris, his additional offense added to them, I think they need to continue to allow him to be the scoring threat that he is. Having the best season coming over from the Clippers, people are thinking, well, wow, what's he going to do playing with more talented players there in Philadelphia? Joel Embiid being the focal point of the offense. And you could see last night Joel Embiid out. He was the number one offensive player. I think he's underrated as an offensive player. And then I think another thing that, Nick, you and I talked about with Mannix, our friend, as far as Jimmy Butler and what role he's going to play coming down the stretch, because we believe that Jimmy Butler has a mindset and a skill set that no one else on that team, and it's more suited for playoff basketball. You know, Jimmy Butler, he's trying to get a contract extension, or is he going to leave Philadelphia and go to another team? So this run of 20 games and this playoff stretch for Jimmy Butler and this franchise becomes very, very important.
He's got to be the closer. Listen, we know that this team without Joel Embiid cannot compete at a high level. But even with Joel Embiid, the reason last year they were not able to get through a Boston Celtics team that didn't have Kyrie, that they lost in five with three games coming down to the final minute. They were 0-3 in the series in those games.
And Nick,
didn't have an end-of-game guy.
And you do have a concern about dominant NBA centers once they get into the playoff because of the style and the referee.
Yeah, listen, Joel Embiid, the only player in the league that takes more free throws than him is James Harden. A huge part of his game is getting to the line and being a very good free throw shooter for a big man. And they're going to let you play harder in the playoffs. He's not going to get to the line as much. You are not going to be able to, late in games, typically just go through him. And so last year, they were in a spot where at the end of games, it was Marco Bellinelli, Ersan Ilyasova, J.J. Redick, because Ben Simmons, we know, at the end of games, if it's not in transition, can't do anything for you. And it's tough to run plays for a big man. So that's where Jimmy Butler comes
in. Yeah, and all those players last year hurt Philadelphia because they're all jump shooters. You need a guy who's a slasher, a guy who can score not only with his jump shot, but can get to the hole, can get fouled and be able to finish that off, being a good free throw shooter. So Jimmy Butler, man, he fills a spot on that roster that they desperately need, especially in the playoff basketball.
If we just go through the teams that are championship contenders, right? Just have a shot to be in the finals or to compete with the Warriors in the West. Milwaukee's got Giannis. Toronto's got Kawhi. Boston's got Kyrie. Out West, you want to know one of the reasons why Denver, no matter even if they get the one seed, I got real questions about them. I don't think they have that guy. Their best player is Nikola Jokic. Jamal Murray is a nice young player, but I don't think they've got that guy. OKC's got him in Paul George. Portland has him in Damian Lillard. The Rockets have him in James Harden. For the Sixers, it has to be Jimmy Butler. That is why that trade was so important. And I like Tobias, and Tobias can do it to a degree, but Jimmy Butler's the guy I believe in that can do
that. Joel Embiid and Tobias get him to that close and allow Jimmy Butler to finish him off.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a break. Coming up, could the Celtics trade their entire young core for AD? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for today's best sports shows. Tune in for the big personalities and the big stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday starting at 6:30 a.m. Eastern only on FS1. Back here with Chris Mannix, and we're talking Boston Celtics. They've dropped four of their last six, fifth place in the East. And now, according to reports, they are prepared to offer literally anyone on the roster for Anthony Davis this offseason. And that includes Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. What do you think, Mannix? Should the Celtics blow up the roster to trade for Anthony Davis?
Can I just real quick?
Mm-hmm.
You reported this on this show two weeks ago, right?
Weeks ago, yeah.
Okay, and now it's just being further reported. But I just wanted to give you credit because you said this report on this show 2 weeks ago, and now someone else is also
basically what the Celtics did was they didn't directly say you could have Jason Tatum, but made the Pelicans aware that everyone was on the table. The funny part about the Anthony Davis situation is that it has absolutely nothing to do with Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis, we know, can't be a free agent until 2020. Whatever team he gets traded to, he's going to play for. This is entirely a Kyrie Irving situation. If the Celtics re-sign Kyrie Irving, or are told by Kyrie before July 1st that he is going to re-sign, they are going to go all in for Anthony Davis. And that does mean Jason Tatum, draft picks, Jaylen Brown, whatever it takes to get Anthony Davis on this roster. But it has everything to do with Kyrie. If they don't get Kyrie Irving, I'm not sure they put a substantial offer on the table for Anthony Davis, because they can't run that type of risk. I think, and this is more speculation, but I think if Kyrie says, I'm out, I'm going to go somewhere else, I think their plan B is to go down this path with their young guys, re-sign Terry Rozier, and try to build that way.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, if Kyrie leaves, the Celtics will not make a realistic offer.
Not one that includes Jason Tatum, for sure.
But if Kyrie stays, what's the type of offer you think that they make if Kyrie's there?
I think there are two types of offers. One would be Jason Tatum and a little bit less of the sweeteners that are involved. Like, you can get the one guy that everybody agrees is the best player available out there. Or you can take a Jaylen Brown-centric package and a whole bunch of draft picks. The Memphis pick, you know, maybe there'll be a Clipper pick in that mix.
So you think the Tatum package wouldn't include the good draft picks?
No, I think it ultimately would, but I think their first offer would be. Look, I just don't – I've said this before to you guys and I've written it. They're just not going to be outbid. So if the Pelicans came back and said, this is what it's going to take or else we're going somewhere else, I think the Celtics would throw all those picks in there. And look – Danny Ainge has been willing to go deep on stuff like this before. Some stuff that hasn't even gotten done. You remember where would the Celtics be If the Charlotte Hornets a few years ago took the trade offer,
they offered four first-round picks for Justice Winslow.
For that pick that ultimately was Frank Kaminsky.
Right,
not
but they wanted Justice Winslow.
Right, they want the ninth pick in the draft.
Good job, like, so Michael Jordan.
They've been...
Can't get four first, meaning Kaminsky.
One was one of the Brooklyn picks, too. It was insane in there. But, like, the point is, Danny Ainge's been willing to go all in on situations like this before. I think he'll do it again.
How much has Tatum hurt his stock?
Not at all.
Not at all?
Zero. Well, this whole... Terry Rozier might be the exception. I don't think Jason Tatum has hurt his stock all that much. I don't think Jaylen Brown has hurt his stock all that much.
How could Jaylen Brown not have hurt
Because I think people across the league understand that this season has been a strange one in Boston. And, Nick, you keep putting numbers up there all the time. You keep graphicking me to death, if that can that can be a word. Jaylen Brown in the postseason last year, you know what his numbers were?
Tell me.
18 points per game, 47% from the floor, and close to 40% from three.
Yeah.
Those are real numbers. That's an 18-game. It's not a small sample size. That's an 18-game sample size. We're talking about a player for the first 2 years of his career was in back-to-back conference finals and contributing to both teams. That stuff matters to the executives that watch the games and say, in big-time situations, this guy has proved himself to play well. Everybody is a mess on that Celtic team this year. The entire team is discombobulated.
Well, but that's got to matter then. Hold on. We saw that the New Orleans Pelicans thought the Lakers' offer, which was all the young guys and draft picks, was not enough. So I just want to know, because I do not know Danny Ainge, with the exception of offering the four first-round picks for Justice Winslow, to ever overbid for a guy. That's not his tendency, is to lose a trade or to overpay. I just want to know, like, I'll show you the Lakers' young players, leave Lonzo out of it because he's hurt, compared to the Celtics' young players. And I know you don't love the per – those are per-game numbers now. And you say Jaylen Brown was 18 points per game in the playoffs, so there's an 18-game sample. This is a 60-game sample, but whatever. I'll give you the per 36 stats because you would tell me those are more important, more relevant. Show them the per 36. If for the Pelicans, Ingram, Kuzma, and Ball, and picks wasn't enough, how do the Celtics trump that unless it's Brown, Tatum, and a bunch of picks?
I don't know if it was not enough, because I think that the Pelicans doing what's best for the franchise is by getting more teams involved. So that might have been enough if you didn't have the potential that, man, Boston had called me. And I like their younger players a little bit better than I like the Lakers players. So allowing Boston to get through the trade deadline to get to the point where they can go. Because for me, this is about Danny Ainge got one move. We've been talking about, when's he going to do it? When's he going to do it? When's he going to do it? And I just believe that one move, Anthony Davis is a special enough player that I believe he'll give all those draft picks and everything if he's able to keep Kyrie, because Anthony Davis-Kyrie combination would be special.
I agree that I don't know that the Lakers' offer was not enough. I think it was the Pelicans want to see what else is out there, and that's a smart play by the Pelicans to do that. But, Nick, how do you not include the situations in this stuff? Like, the Lakers are a losing situation right now. Brandon Ingram's not playing behind anybody. Jaylen Brown is playing behind multiple guys. Jason Tatum is now the, at times, fourth scoring option on that team, at least third on most nights. That has to be factored
But that's where, to me, the efficiency and the field goal percentages matter. Because if you are the fourth option, guess what? Defenses are not scheming around you. You should be getting a lot of open shots.
Yeah, but I can counter that argument, too, by saying, like, you're doing a lot of standing around as a fourth option, playing off Kyrie Irving, standing in the corner, shooting open jump shots. Look at the shot selection for Jason Tatum this year.
Sitting in the corner, shooting open jump shots.
That's not everybody's game. Like, that's not what everybody can do. Not everybody's built to, it's like with the Lakers. Not everybody's built to play off of LeBron James. Brandon Ingram struggled with that early in the season. Luke Walton said he's got to be more of a cutter. He's got to get to the basket, hands up. It's a style of play as much as the shots.
Listen, what we can't do, though, because I have been consistent on Brandon Ingram. I think, and now I give him credit for his last 2 weeks. His last 2 weeks, he's been quite good. I thought Brandon Ingram coming out of college was an overrated prospect. I thought Brandon Ingram going into this year was an overrated prospect, even though I think the LeBron and AD would be a great pairing. At no point have I been like, you know who's a great prospect? Brandon Ingram. I'm not making that case. But what we can't do is make every case the one that fits for the Celtics. We can't talk about how much better players are under Brad Stevens, and then fail to acknowledge that could actually hurt the Celtics in trades. That you see Avery Bradley leave, and it's like, he's not that good. Jay Crowder leaves, and he's not that good. And so what would Jaylen Brown be when he's not under Brad Stevens? We can't say the playoffs matter, but the regular season don't. Doesn't matter. We can't say when both of these guys' three-point percentages dropped 7 points from last year in Tatum and Brown, that their stock doesn't drop. Your stock, in my eyes, your stock does drop when that happens.
Your stock might drop, but also when you look at people that are looking at basketball, you can't dismiss the playoff minutes. And the reason why we don't talk about it with the Lakers, because they don't have any. So you have to be able to bake in the most pressure situation, what did they do when their team was not their most athletic? They weren't their most talented. These young players stepped up in those. Imagine if we had Ingram averaging those 18 points.
In the playoff series.
That would change the story.
Total game.
If we had Kuzma had gone through 18-game playoff and he had averaged 18, it would change that. So I'm sure that NBA teams, not only looking at Boston has better picks, Boston typically have one better prospect, not two. They have one better prospect. And that time spent, you have to keep hope that Jaylen Brown, like other players in our environment, he can get back to that level or be a little bit better.
I just want to ask you one other question. Let's say Kyrie leaves. Why, for the Celtics, do you think they still wouldn't go all in on Anthony Davis and say, you know what? We'll convince him to stay?
Because I think it's too big a risk given the amount of assets that would have to be included, including those draft picks. You have to let, it's almost like live to fight another day. You let that pitch go by, and you wait to see who else comes available, because invariably somebody else becomes
And then we'll hear that the real target was Giannis in 2022.
It's Giannis. But I wouldn't trade Jaylen Brown for him. Oh, that's clear right there. I'm back in on Jaylen Brown. 18 points per game in the playoffs.
And we're on Maddox coming up. Did LeBron ruin the Lakers' chemistry?
This close.
No.
Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime March 9th only on Fox.
Let's go, Showtime. That's my guy.
It's your guy. And Mannix moonlights as a boxing expert. That's how I first came across him.
I do. We doing boxing now? Great. What? All right.
Back to basketball.
Mannix is here, and we're talking Lakers. Another bad loss for a team that really doesn't have any losses to give away. Last night, they fell to the lowly Grizzlies 110-105. LeBron had a triple-double, but he was just 8 of 23 from the field. Lakers once again struggled with chemistry. They once again struggled on defense. They are three games back of the eighth seed with 22 games to go. Here's LeBron and what he thinks is going on the team.
At this point, if you are still allowing distractions to affect you, the way you play, then this is the wrong franchise to be a part of, and you should just come and be like, listen, I can't do this. Like, seriously, if you're distracted by playoff pushes and then all the stuff that's been talked about this year, just come and do your job. We do our job at a high level, and that's not a distraction. That's what you want. That's what you want every game. You want to feel like you're fighting for something.
Chris Mannix, we have heard more and more from LeBron with regards to how frustrated he is, what he thinks is going on, what he'd love to see from his team towards the media. What do you make of his frustrations?
Understandable, because the Lakers' schedule gets really tough over the next couple of weeks. And if you're going to make a move in the playoff standings, you have to do it against teams like New Orleans and against Memphis. At the same time, if you look at that game just in a vacuum, LeBron's going to look in the mirror there. 8 for 23. You know, Nick, you've talked a lot about how he carries the offensive burden. That's not carrying the offensive burden in a game like that. The Pelicans game was a little bit different. I thought he was much better in that one. But if you're shooting that far below 50% from the floor while simultaneously not playing any defense and not contributing in many other ways, you have to kind of look in the mirror there. As a team, the Lakers look like a group that's kind of given up. I know the narrative coming out of this Memphis game was that the body language was much better than what it was after the Pelicans game. But if you're getting outworked by a Memphis team that has no incentive whatsoever to win games, that has to really trouble you as you head towards some tough games in the schedule.
Listen, this game last night, LeBron has to take enormous ownership in. Mm-hmm. He was wildly inefficient by his or by anyone's standards. He turned the ball over a bunch, and he's what he's been since he came back from the injury on the defensive end, which is a liability. Those are all just facts in evidence. We saw it right there. The Lakers, I tweeted before the fourth quarter, who'd have thought it would come to this, but the biggest quarter of their season is about to unfold on a February night in Memphis. And that fourth quarter, for the first time since December, They played some great defense. The first 4 minutes of that quarter, they forced two shot clock violations, forced two more turnovers. Memphis didn't make a basket. And the Lakers scored 0 points. They didn't cut into the lead at all, and they were fighting uphill continually. Now, so LeBron's got to – the reality is LeBron, because of the lack of shape he's in post-injury, the size he is post-injury, and his lack of explosion post-injury on the offensive and defensive end, he's got to be great on offense in order to elevate the team, because he has been a liability on defense. I think LeBron was unfairly maligned over the last couple of years as a defender because he was an average defender that to me was treated as a bad defender. But right now he's a bad defender and it's infecting the team. You let Memphis score. Letting Memphis score 34 in the first quarter is like letting a real offense score 50. And so, I mean, they were better from that moment forward, but it's another game, see, where they're fighting uphill the whole time as they have in every single game since LeBron came back from the injury. The two of them, the Celtics and the Rockets, they were able to come back, but they've been uphill after the first quarter every time.
I think the next couple of weeks become very important, couple of weeks in LeBron's career, not only from is he going to get in better shape, and what type of leadership is he going to show? Because there's a difference in playing good basketball and playing good basketball and being a good leader. Because LeBron can play bad basketball, but his ability to be able to lead, it should be able to get them through these games in Memphis and the Pelicans without AD. LeBron should be able to will. He's been in enough situations where in Cleveland the last couple years where they didn't have the great record. And he willed a lot of those wins late in the season, because the one thing that I get concerned about, and it's hard to put a formula on it, but man, when you hit that wall and Father Time and he comes calling, it happens in a hurry. It's like you wake up one morning and that extra gear that I wanted to go to, that I used to be able to go to all the time, it's not there. Now, I'll count it as the injury, but I'm telling you, I'm watching this because at some point, how LeBron is playing, that becomes the norm for players. It happened for Kobe, and Kobe fought it and everything, and with injuries in the end that really kind of polluted the water and everything. Who is LeBron James right now as a basketball player? Can he get back to where he was last May? And these next couple of weeks become very, very important, because if they're not successful, they don't have no chance. If they have two bad weeks in a row, they don't have a chance to be able to secure one of those last playoff spots.
It's also, I mean, Lee, you mentioned last playoff spots. That's plural. Like, you need the 7 spot. Like, it's almost kind of pointless jumping in and grabbing. Like, if
unless
merit
Golden
to it,
State falls, they're only one game up
you're
on
right.
Denver.
If Denver.
Unless Golden State
right, but I'm assuming that Golden
from
State,
a formality.
If
yes.
Golden State holds on to that spot, it's almost pointless sliding that 8 spot to get beat as badly as they would.
So, yes, LeBron needs to step up, play a little better, whatever you want to call it. But the other issue they're having is team chemistry. And one rival executive came out the other day and said that he believes LeBron actually killed team chemistry with all this talk about Anthony Davis and wanting him to come. What do you make of that?
I buy it, because I've heard it. I've heard it from different people across the league. And, Nick, this is where you and I completely disagree on the process itself. And to me, I guess it boils down to this. We can agree that Anthony Davis is his own man, makes his own decisions, charts his own course.
Can we agree?
I do agree with that.
Okay.
The buck stops with the player. The player controls the narrative. The player can tell the agent that not to do it. At the same time, I believe this strategy was suggested to Anthony Davis, that this was
why?
As a way to get to the Lakers.
No, why do you believe it was suggested to him?
Because it's a way to get to the Lakers faster.
And but he couldn't. Anthony Davis
I based that on the fact that Anthony Davis hasn't said word one prior to all this about getting out of New Orleans before this moment, before a few weeks ago.
So
he hasn't said word one.
So let me just make sure I understand, and then I'll let you. Sorry for interrupting. Bless you. That Anthony Davis tells his agent Rich Paul, my number one goal is to get to the Lakers as soon as possible. And Rich Paul then says, I know the strategy to do that. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Well, I don't know if he said my goal is to get the Lakers as soon as possible. I think this was a way of getting out of New Orleans and making the Lakers the best, making it the easiest way to get to the Lakers. But okay. My point with all this is, do you believe that LeBron James could have killed all that? Could have killed that strategy? Could have said, don't do it. It's not the right way to go.
No.
You don't think he could have influenced that at all?
If he is, then you think that LeBron can tell Anthony Davis.
No, not Anthony, but I think if there are conversations.
Well, hold on. If LeBron's telling Rich Paul, and then Rich Paul, I have too much, listen, I know Rich. I have too much respect for Rich Paul to think that he's going to go against one client's wishes because it's what LeBron tells him to do.
I'm not saying he's doing.
Look, the goal
for everybody in that moment, right, is to get Anthony Davis to the Lakers, correct?
Well,
like that's
sure.
that's in the bag.
I think the first goal is trying to have a relationship, because the first big announcement was not, no, I want to be traded. The first big announcement was, I'm going to Clutch Sports. So for me, it became, once I announced that, there had to be a game plan going forward. They had to sell him on something. Mm-hmm. And you're going to come here, and what we believe, and I'm like you, I believe they made the recommendation to Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis does not change agencies, he does not force New Orleans to trade him this season. He plays out this year and then attacks free agency by not signing the extension. I believe, and that's what he communicated, that was his plan. That plan changed after he went to Clutch Sports. So that was the initial contact there. And now, so Clutch Sports' first move is, what does Anthony Davis want to do? And I believe that was trying to get him to Los Angeles.
Look, I agree with all that, that everything you said, I believe, okay, to be true. Everybody's goal at that time was to get Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers.
Sure.
This plan clearly backfired on everybody. We agree on that?
Sure.
In every possible way, mm-hmm, that plan backfired. All I'm saying is that I think LeBron was aware of how this was all going to go down. Mm-hmm. And I think if he said, look, this is a bad idea because if it does go bad, I'm going to wind up with what I have right now, I think that's where the mistake was made.
All right,
he could have influenced it by saying, you know what, maybe we just wait until the offseason.
If my agent, if I told him I am signing with you to achieve a goal, and I'm signing with you for this reason, and when I decide it's time to activate the plan, I am told, well, actually, a more important client of mine would prefer we not do it now, then that agent is, I think he could lose his damn license. Like, that is, you cannot work that way, first of all. Second of all, LeBron is not the general manager of the Lakers. I know people want to, he didn't sign Rondo, he didn't sign Lance, and he didn't give out the list of players that could be
traded.
But
he did help Magic Johnson in saying, Magic Johnson, when he said we're trying to trade for AD, LeBron added to it by saying, I talked to AD already about it. And that sends a bad message to the young players in the locker room.
But
regardless if we want to believe that or not, that happened.
But so let me just ask
this. And that's true. Like, that is 100% true, that message got, like, that was what how it was received by the young players in the locker room.
Is that not the responsibility of the young players to recognize? Hold on. I just want to make sure, because I feel like sometimes we remove the agency. Not the sports agency, the agency. The day LeBron signed with the Lakers, were we not talking about Ingram and Kuzma's potential trade chips at some point? The day he signed with the Lakers, did those guys not know?
Yeah, we were, but that don't mean nothing.
Not as much.
When LeBron James says something, that would mean a lot more to my career than some guys on TV talking about it.
All right, we got to leave it there. We got to go to break. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.